Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan at SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd at Season 8, Episode 39. It's Lions Week as the Steelers get ready to take on the Lions on Sunday Night Football on NBC. And, of course, Dave, it'll be the bye week after that. I don't remember, certainly in the 8 years we've done this, that the Steelers have had the bye week right at the halfway mark. So kind of a nice delineation point. We've talked about how things have gone generally very well for the Steelers on the injury front with no season-ending injuries. But from what we were hoping when we talked on Monday for the injury report, not anything positive coming out of practice on Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah, absolutely not. The guys that really started on the injury report, they're really not looking positive to play this week. That being Stephon Tuitt with the back injury, Marcus Gilbert with the hamstring, and Vance McDonald with the knee. Now, obviously, Juju Smith and David DeCastro have been on the injury report this week. DeCastro's wife gave birth to I think their first child, so that's why he wasn't practicing Wednesday. He was back Thursday, and Juju Smith-Schuster, who entered the week in concussion protocol, practiced fully on Wednesday, practiced again on Thursday, and barring
it, made it to the hockey game last night.
Yeah, boy, he's Mr. Pittsburgh right now.
He is Mr. Pittsburgh.
And we'll talk about maybe something about him here in just a minute anyway. But,
he's going to be good to go.
Yeah, Tuitt looks like he's going to be out, or he says he's going to be out.
And one of our age-old adages comes up with Stephon Tuitt. When you want to know something about a player's injury, the last person to ask is the player.
Well, they always try to paint the positive picture there, and why wouldn't they? But don't look good for him, Gilbert, and we'll see about.
Well, he's out, right? Tua's out.
Yeah, he said he's out. I suspect
Steve Butler said he's out. So he's out.
Yeah, Gilbert doesn't sound good, and then of course McDonald probably at best doubtful for him as well. So I mean the inactive list is pretty much set. I mean, you got Dobbs, you got Tuitt, you got Gilbert, you probably got McDonald on there, you got Martavis Bryant on there, and you probably got Gerald Hawkins on there, and who am I missing here?
Brian Allen.
Arthur Mutz. Yeah, the final one's probably going to be the tough one to choose between either Brian Allen or Mutz. But the other six are pretty much, I think, set in stone.
All right, I'm with you on that. So, Dave, let's talk a little bit about where the Steelers are. We're going to hit the halfway point. And, guys, just kind of laying out next week, we've had some suggestions about what we're going to do. Obviously, Monday we'll be recapping the game, and that'll be pretty straightforward. Mike Tomlin won't have a press conference next week, so we won't have that. I imagine Ben won't have his show next week either, so there won't be a lot of info Tuesday. We'll probably spend Wednesday as a step back for the Steelers and do a midseason review. Just do our kind of analysis, kind of go through position groups and players, offense, defense, through basically all 53 guys in the coaching staff, and give you our thoughts on where the Steelers are. It's a perfect time to do it, the bye coming at the halfway point. So that'll be our Wednesday show. Friday we'll do, and we'll kind of highlight this next week. We'll spend the whole day Friday doing kind of Q&A on, we've got that. We get thousands of questions over the course of the season, and we do our best to kind of respond to stuff. But obviously a lot of things fall through the cracks because of everything else we're trying to do. So on Friday, we'll do a whole kind of listener dedicated show next week to get things done. And then we'll try to maybe squeeze in a guest either Friday or Monday to talk big picture NFL, because we haven't done that. Maybe the following Monday we'll do that, Dave, get somebody in and just have kind of an NFL roundtable a little bit, because you know we haven't been able to talk about the league as much as we like. Just we get to do it on this Friday podcast. So just kind of laying things out as to where we're going to go next week. If you want to think about things and shoot us anything, suggestions or thoughts you have during the bye week, go ahead. But Dave, so let's talk about this kind of the Steelers offense here against Detroit. And, you know, we've seen them play, we saw them play their best quarter of the season in the first half against the Bengals, a little bit of a different tack by Mike Tomlin, taking the ball after the Bengals lost the toss and the coin toss, and the Steelers go right down the field the first two possessions. Do you expect to see the Steelers do something different in the short yardage game or the red zone game this week?
What have you been defining as short yardage right now? Watson and that's it? I mean, is that your definition of short yardage?
Well, I just mean being just – well, let me ask it more simply. Let's start with short yardage. What do you expect them to do in short yardage situations, meaning third or fourth and less than two or less?
I think you could potentially see Le'Veon Bell start to stay in there a little bit more, or Connor. That's why it was why I was saying last week that, man, the next opportunity they get in one of those third and short situations is to put Watson back there and then run a quick, you know, play action, something very high percentage passing wise off of that, because you've done it enough times now that when Watson comes in, everybody knows he's getting a football. So, they did try that the second time that Watson was in that game the other day. But, okay, that aside, he's got it. Do you go away from it just because you had one bad game at it? I mean, he's now 3 for 4 on short yardage carries. I mean, that's not
– Okay, do you think if you have Watson in the game – does that mean you don't have Rosie Nix in the game with him?
We don't know what his Watson probably prefers not running behind a fullback. You know? You go back to the preseason and all, how much did he run behind a fullback? You know? I don't remember much, if any. He might just be one of those backs that just stay the hell out of his way. You know,
should the Steelers have their backs line up closer to the line of scrimmage on short yardage situations?
That we could talk 2 hours about that, right? I mean,
yeah. These are the things. If you're Mike Tomlin, you're Todd Haley, you got to think about these things. You got to think about, you know, why you haven't been successful. And his answer is, we had a bad day. Or is the answer, we can do things better, we got to do things differently? And that's the interesting thing to talk about is if they're in these situations again, what should they be doing this week?
But we're only talking about this because of the failures last week, right? I mean,
that's why you talk about stuff, right? If they, I mean, we wouldn't talk about anything if they scored 90 points, right?
Right, but we'd probably be talking about something. I'm trying to pull up their short yardage numbers right now. Just because you have one failed third and
okay,
one.
So your answer is things are fine, just keep doing what you're doing.
Well, yeah, I mean, occasionally you're gonna definitely leave Le'Veon Bell back there to mix it up and all. Okay, here we go. Third, let's see here. I thought I made that only third down. Situation. Third and one situations. Le'Veon Bell's actually 1, 2, 3, third and three or less. Le'Veon Bell's carried it 3, 4 times. He got 6 yards on one of those carries, 1 yard on a third and one, no gain on another third and one, and a loss of 4 on another one. He's got a lower success rate than Terrell Watson does. And Watson, as I said, on 3 third-and-one carries and 1 fourth-and-one one carry, he's 3 for 4.
Converted the 3 coming into the game. The Bell's four-yard loss was against the Bengals in that game when he did get that opportunity. Okay, so let me ask you just kind of two basic tactical things. We all agree that, you know, occasionally you want to run play action, but you're going to have a package that you put in there. Would you like to see Ben quarterback sneak on occasion?
I think you need to do that. That should be the quarterback's prerogative to see what he sees.
Were you not surprised by what you said this week?
Do you think Tom Brady doesn't call one play in the huddle and sees what he sees and snaps and just takes him damn self? I bet that's happened half a dozen times or times four anyway, you know?
Times 100. We all know what Brady, going into kind of last season, Brady had been, I think, successful on, you know, 80 straight quarterback sneaks. I mean, it was ridiculous. He was going over the center, one shoulder or the other, one butt cheek or the other, and getting, you know, a yard or two every time. I mean, he didn't get stuffed until last year, I think, you know, over a period of 8 or 10 years. And he, you know, we don't see as many quarterback sneaks as we used to, because you'll see a nose tackle and then both, guys playing one technique off of the shoulder of the nose who's playing zero. They'll be stacking it inside to take that away. Now, obviously, if they do that, that gives you a bunch of options to look at. And if they don't do it, you can almost a lot of times, and you've seen this again, this is not as common as it used to be, but you would see quarterbacks go on sound with the center or just go on touch. You know, when you feel my hands, snap the ball. It doesn't matter what anybody else is doing in the offense. It doesn't even matter if they're set. Assuming the linemen are in position, you know, we're just going to go. And that's been a very effective technique. But for those who don't know the history, 9 years ago when the Steelers played the Redskins in their fancy new stadium at the time in a game that I was in attendance, Ben tried a quarterback sneak late in the first half and ended up busting something up. I can't remember if it was shoulder or hand or arm or whatever it was, and didn't play the second half. I think that game was Byron Leftwich came in. The Steelers won the game. But from that point in time, I'm not sure until Ben ran one last year that Ben had run a quarterback sneak. He ran one last year or the year before, and I'm not sure we've seen – I guarantee you we haven't seen three or four since that point 9 years ago. And I was just shocked, Dave. The reason I brought it up is I was shocked to hear Ben say, I'd like to do it. I'm happy to do it, whatever. Because I'm with you. That's a 100%. You can audible into that, or you can just go on sound and do it yourself. He doesn't need to be asking permission unless they got a veto on him. Like, don't run the quarterback sneak.
Yeah, it's hard to roll off in your head how many times he has done it over the last three or four times. I'm trying to pull that up right now as well too.
I promise you it's one. I mean, I can remember the game was at Heinz Field. I was in the press box, so I think it was 2 years ago. And, you know, I don't know if it was the Saints or the Niners. There was a game 2 years ago where he went, you know, he did a quarterback sneak. And, the reason everybody remembers, at least the reason I remember, is because it's just so unusual. It's just crazy.
You're saying you think the last time was last season?
I think it was last season or the season before. And I promise you, since that game he got hurt in Washington, he has not run five quarterback sneaks. I'd be shocked if it was even, you know, if it was more than two.
Let's see. I am not showing on a on any play a rush between 1 and 2 yards to go on any down. I'm not showing anything from last year. I'm showing twice in 2015, both against the Seahawks. Do you remember that?
That sounds right. I mean, that could be the game.
Twice.
That game was on the road. So I'm remembering a game at home. But maybe, my memory could be failing me.
Not at our age.
yeah, right. What's your name?
not with all the dope I smoked. Let's see, 2014, just a handful of times.
Well, so anyway, let's get to the bigger question. Are you for Ben running it?
You mean sneaking it? No, running. No.
Sneaking it.
Yeah, sneaking. Yes. It all based on what he sees. I mean, Todd Haley made the comment yesterday, you don't want him to get ear-holed, you know. But I mean, realistically, how many times does that happen? I know. One time is too many. Yeah, I mean, if he sees something there, absolutely he should call his own number. And I doubt that he doesn't have the ability to call that or wouldn't do it anyway, even if he didn't have the go-ahead.
Yeah, so, okay, so yeah, well, your once, general
once,
sense.
Once again, we're going back to the situation here. This team has been successful on third and short situations, and here we are spending 15 minutes on it because one failed fourth and one last week.
Well, they were 0-for-4 last week. I mean, Watson failed on fourth and one, Le'Veon Bell failed on third and one, and they threw two incompletions on third and one. So, I mean, I think it's a worthy topic to talk about. I mean, when four straight times you got 1 yard to go and you didn't make it, four possessions in the second half to put the game away.
All right. Yeah, fair enough.
If you're Todd Haley and you're coming out in the second drive, you got a third and one at midfield, you're going with Watson or Bell back there, you are not using Rosie Nixon. If Ben sees something, then go ahead and go. I mean, is that kind of where you are?
The next opportunity, regardless of the area of the field, I would put Le'Veon Bell in there.
Yeah.
Just to change it up again. That doesn't mean I'm done with Watson, but when Watson, like I said, unless you start making opposing defenses fear something other than him getting the football in his hands, they're going to be able to key on him a little bit more, and they're going to tighten up those gaps, you know, and stack the line and all like that. So, at least with Le'Veon Bell, you really still don't know what the hell's coming.
All right, so you've been rightly singing the praises of Rosie Nixon and what he's doing. Goal line short yardage situations, if Le'Veon Bell's the back, do you want Rosie Nixon in there as a fullback, an H-back? Because the Steelers have obviously not gone that way, and they've not gone that way for a reason. Is that something you'd be for, or, you know, no view, or how it is fine?
You know, I'm more apt to wanting to maybe see him try to spread things out a little bit more down there.
Me too. That's what I want to see, a little three wide. Maybe have Rosie as an H-back. But the idea that every one of these carries has been straight ahead. I mean, they have not bounced anything. They've not drawn anything up wide. You know, we've seen some of the Steelers aren't going to run read option. They're not going to run a toss sweep. They have run the toss sweep, that kind of fake move that they use with the toss outside. But, you know, I, a little more diversity of the play calling, I'm with you. It doesn't have to be I said this on Monday, it doesn't have to be the home run shot on the outside or the single back straight up the middle, because those seem to be the only two options to this point this season. That's what they've run.
You know, here's the thing, I'm not a huge fan of going empty down there either, deep down in the other end. We've seen them do that a few times. In fact, one of those plays a few games ago where they ran it, you know, where they had Le'Veon Bell out wide and then Roosevelt Nix was the only one in the backfield, and I think he threw a short. Pass to Le'Veon Bell on that play, and everybody's like, why not run it right there? Todd Haley essentially said yesterday that was a run play designed for Roosevelt Nix there in that situation when he was the lone back and Ben audible to that play to Bell. So because they were joking with Haley about, you thought about maybe giving Roosevelt Nix some short yardage carries, and you know that's where he spilled the beans there. Look, they've got to do something different here, because what they're doing right now is not working. I've never been.
We're talking now red zone. Yeah, are we red zone here?
Well, I'm talking goal to go almost, really, because how many times have we seen them get? You know, how many times have the red zone trips been died inside
the 10. Inside the 10,
you know? So, I mean,
yeah.
Sometimes when they get a play and they get a first and goal, that originally started maybe around the 17 or 18 yard lines, you're saying, damn, You know, can we have the option of resetting the ball at the 11 or something?
Right.
Because they just it just seems like they've been so bad, you know, inside the 10 and really inside the 5 as well. A lot of this, I think, has to do, David, you know, we keep joking about it, but there's not a lot of space to work with down there, you know.
I look, it's interesting because, you know, you go back to Mike Tomlin, you know, just thinking about their offensive philosophy, and Todd Haley got asked about this, and, Ed Bouchette wrote about it in the Post-Gazette yesterday, and Todd Haley stepped away from the 30 points a game thing and started talking about how, you know, different scenarios, different personnel, you're looking for different things. I thought it was a bit of a cop-out from Todd Haley. And the way the article was written, saying we're going to lean on the running game more. Haley didn't say that, but Ed implied it by the numbers. Look, when the running game has been successful for the Steelers, they've leaned on it all throughout Mike Tomlin's tenure. This isn't a new thing. It's they haven't been able to get the passing game cranked up the way they want to be. I think it's a bit disingenuous for the Steelers, for anybody in the organization to talk about. And for the media to write that, you know, okay, you know, it's going to be ground and pound and clock management, because that's not what they've been trying to do. They just haven't been effective passing the ball in any way, shape, or form consistently through 7 games in the season.
Especially when they get in third down situations. I mean,
yeah,
he has been, you know, the whole. I mean, look, like it or not, it goes back to the quarterback. You know. He's not been good on third downs this year, and he's not been good in the red zone as well. So, they've been able to move the football between the 20s. I mean, just look at the yard, you know, obviously not every game, you know, but, for the most part, they've done a good job in that. What would you say Ben's stats look like? Passing the football on plays from the opponent's 1 to 10 yard line.
He hit AB with the touchdown against Cincinnati last week,
was a great throw and a great. I mean, he put it where only AB could catch that ball too. That throw that one in the pile with the Jesse James throw early in the season.
Yeah, which. Turned out to be a great throw and a great catch. Not sure it was still advised, but worked out fantastically. Obviously it hasn't been good because they haven't been good in the red zone. So, I mean, I'm just trying to think of other short touchdown passes Ben's thrown. And, you know, I can't think of any.
Well, you know, that little flip to Juju counted as one.
Which one was that? The inside hand, that inside one?
Yeah, the inside little shovel pass.
Yeah. Yeah, you right. Know, okay.
The one to Jesse that we just talked about, right? That was inside the
Yeah, it was probably from about the 10, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to let's see here. How many does he have? I know he's only completed like 8, something like 8 passes last time I looked at it there. Here we go. Well, then you had the drop last week by McDonald, right?
Yep. That was. I think it was a tougher guess than people give him credit for, but yes, he should have caught it.
A couple incomplete short rights to Juju. What are the completions here? Short middle to Le'Veon Bell for 3 yards. Short middle to Juju. That was at for a touchdown. That was at shovel pass.
He hit Martavis last week on, you know, from the 8 to the 5 or, you know, 7 to the 4, whatever it was. The answer is they haven't done many, you know. So what's the answer to the red zone problems? Is it because, you know, they're not where I was going with to start was, you know, over the past couple of years, Mike's worked so much on the 7 shots in training camp. They became so efficient at 2-point conversions that, you know, you expect them to continue to be good down there. Now, all of a sudden, they don't go for 2. I think they've done it once this year, and they've become ineffective at kind of, you know, converting, you know, not just inside the red zone, but as you point out, inside the 10-yard line. And it's just a change. And look, there is a part of me, and obviously part of you in talking about some of this stuff, that wants to say, look, this is sample size. It's reversion to the mean. You're not going to convert 80%. You're not going to convert 20% over larger sample sizes. And we saw them be very effective at it, and now they're ineffective at it. And it's just kind of reverting back to what you would expect over a bigger sample size. I mean, you know, I buy that kind of stuff. Just in terms of statistics and how numbers generally work and how performance generally works. So I'm not overly concerned about it, but you'd like to see some creativity in the play calling, because too many of these plays seem to me, Dave, particularly the pass plays, obviously, seem to be one look, it's not there, and then sandlot football.
Ben is 8 of 18 from the 10 to the 1, 44.4% completion percentage, 5 touchdowns on 8 completions in that area. This kid named Deshaun Watson, you ever heard of him? 9 of 11 on passes and throws in that area, 81.8%, with all 9 completions being touchdowns. Eli Manning, ever heard of that guy? 9 of 11, 81.8%, 6 touchdowns.
Is this red zone or is this inside the 10? What's our
0 to 10 or 1 to 10? 1 yard line to 10 yard line.
Is there a lack of creativity in the play calling? Is it just okay, small sample size? What are you gonna put it to?
I think it's Ben trying to put balls in tight places.
I'm still worried that the it's a one read, it's not there, sandlot football type of mentality down there.
Yeah, if it's not open, he's going to. Then it breaks down. Then it seems like the play breaks down. It needs to
immediately.
It needs to be a rhythm thing. If you're throwing the football in that short area of the field, you don't have a lot of room to work with. So it's probably no wonder that if he's not hitting his first read, that it is breaking down.
Have you seen anything different this year in terms of Ben climbing into the pocket versus scrambling out of the pocket and throwing the ball away?
I'll say this. I mean, in that game, was it this past week or was it against Kansas City? He moved the pocket very well.
Against Kansas City, he did. I think you're right. Against Kansas City, I thought less so against the Bengals.
Okay, and maybe that's something they need to do in those situations. Maybe try to design kind of rollout deep down. Look, I mean, let's be honest. How creative, other than that thing that the Bears did a couple weeks ago, how creative can you actually be in 10 yards? I mean, you're running rub routes and, Hank stuff trying to pull people out from the middle of the field, that kind of thing. But in all honesty, I mean, in the fade,
thank God they haven't thrown that much. I'll give them credit for that. Well, the answer is you have guys who you think – you have two of the best one-on-one players in the world in A.B. and Le'Veon Bell. So if you're going to spread things out, you know, you would think you'd get something there. And then, you know, the other stuff, the inside stuff to Juju, I don't know. I agree a little bit. I wish they would spread things out at times, but you know, we saw them spread out and Le'Veon Bell got wrapped around. Was that the KC game or where he basically got held and then tackled. And so the Steelers have to settle for a field goal. There's, you know, nothing you can do if the referees don't call that kind of stuff. And that's, you know, that goes both ways. That's standard stuff. It's just, so let me just take us all the way back out of this rabbit hole and say,
before you do, I want to stay down here for just one more second. One of my favorite calls, and it always seems to be successful when you look at the Patriots and when they had Edelman and all, was that short sort of angle route, normally be on the left side of the field where Edelman runs that angle route and then breaks back outside, you know, situation. I mean, that play seems undefeated when they run it from the 5 yard line and in. You know, why can't you?
I love that slant back to the pylon.
Right, exactly. That angle type of you know, inside and then break back out. It just, you know, you can't tell me Antonio Brown can't stick his foot in the dirt, you know, and pull that off better than Edelman. So, and that's a quick that's a quick you know, thing. And here's the thing: first and goal from the five, I'm running. Okay, I'm going to give Le'Veon Bell one, maybe even two shots at it, and then third down. You know, and look, you can even on we've seen teams do this against the Steelers quite a few times. Why not go out there with your heavy package and then slip the tight end off, you know?
Right.
And that,
right.
You know, why is it other teams can play against the Steelers and make, you know, score, you know, 10 or 14 times down deep, but, you know, the Steelers are 4 or 14 or whatever, you know, type situation. So
I agree. And you guys did a great job of putting that up on the site, SteelersDepot.com. You know, the identical play that the Bears ran and then the Bengals ran, where the Steelers have their package. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see if the Steelers change their goal line package, because it's been massively ineffective with Matakevich and Fort in their, you know, lots of linebackers. And, you know, clear miscommunication as guys not knowing what to do and whose job it is to follow a guy who goes out into the, you know, goes out into the pattern. And it just looks silly. And you do wonder why, you know, that happens against the Steelers, and that yet they haven't been able to find kind of an easy easy touchdown throw so far. So pulling back out, let me just ask you very simply two different questions. Level of concern on a scale of 1 to 10 on the short yardage offense, 10 being tons of concern.
We're talking anywhere on the field, right?
Anywhere in the field, short yardage offense.
Yeah, I'm not worried about that, David. I'm okay. I'm a 4.
Okay, I'm with you. I'm about a 4 as well. Okay, red zone offense level of concern. However you want to define red zone, obviously inside the 20, but whatever components you want to throw in there, I'm about a 7.
Yeah, I'll go with you. 7, 7.5. They got to get better.
Yeah.
I mean, they're playing because they can. It really, especially early in the games, it can change the complexion of a game. 6-0 after 2 drives versus 14-0 after 2 drives can really make the opposing offense get out of what they want to do. And when you have quarterbacks like Blake Bortles and Case Keenums, and you get the Jacoby Brissetts of the world, that really makes a huge difference. You can pretty much end them quickly. So, they're driving down there. They're getting field goals and all, but, I mean, how many times have we seen this over the years? Oh, man, first 3 drives, the Steelers drove it right down the field, and it's 6-0.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I think the best example of that Steelers moving to football, getting nothing out of it, and then the game going completely the other way is that game at Cleveland 3 years ago now, where they go down right down the field, end up kicking a field goal. They stuff the Browns. They've stuffed the Browns twice. Their second possession, they go right down the field and they bobble the snap on the field goal attempt. They get nothing out of it. And then they get smoked by the Browns, like 31-10. And it seems too often. Now, against the Bengals, obviously, they put the points on the board and continue to put field goals on the board. But, yeah, that's the feeling. So,
the first thing that comes to my mind, I think, and maybe I'm wrong on it, maybe I'm misremembering, but remember the game, was it the first career start by Landry Jones against the Chiefs a couple years ago? Didn't it seem like they drove down the field a few times early in that game and didn't come, you know, didn't come away with much? I might be missing, or maybe it was the opposite of way. No, that's what it was. The Chiefs kept the Steelers around in that game. Their first 3 drives ended up in field goals. That's what I'm thinking there. But that's what I'm getting at is you've got to be able to start burying some of these things early, because I think it really changes the complexion of the game. And look, I mean, I'm open to defining the creativity of plays inside the 5-yard line.
Okay, so let's talk about Sunday's game. Let's say the Steelers run 70 offensive snaps. We'll just use that. So AB is going to be on the field the majority of the time. Over under Juju Smith, 45 snaps.
You said 70 total snaps?
Yep.
Jeez, you can make odd numbers, so I have to do the math here. What percentage is 45 of 70?
Well, 35 is 50, so you know, you're about 65, a little bit more, 65, 70%.
That sounds right. I'll take the over because I don't think McDonald's going to play, and I think you're going to want Juju in there blocking a little bit more.
I agree. I think he'll be 45-50 on that and that percentage. Eli Rogers, 50% of the snaps, so you know, 35-70, 50%.
I'll take the under.
Take the under. Okay. I think Eli will get 50% in this game. And Hayward Bay and Justin Hunter, do either of them play more than 8 snaps in this game?
Man, you got to play. As much as I'm not looking forward to it, I think you got to play those guys a combined, you know, 30% of the snaps, David.
That's 21. So 21. So 10 apiece, roughly, or some combination thereof.
Because you've got to make sure you keep this very good Lions defense. This is a Lions defense that's only given up, I think, 6 deep ball receptions to wide receivers this year. 6 in 6 games to wide receivers. Okay? So, I mean, you've got to try to test them on the outside there. And look, I mean, if there's one thing Justin Hunter and DHB does well, it's run straight and fast.
Right. You know? So you think there's that between them they'll play 20 snaps or 30 snaps? If you want it to be 20%.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll be surprised if either guy plays more than 10, but I think that'll be the interesting thing. So it's going to be 2 tight ends. Will Xavier Grimble play half the snaps?
No, I'll say no. And boy, what a loss, McDonald. I know McDonald has had the drops and all like that. But if you want to talk about one injury that could be the most impactful this week, it's not Tua, it's not Gilbert, it's Vance McDonald, because this team has run so damn well when he's been on the field, David. They really have.
Yeah, I got some tweets that were like, "What's the big deal?" And I was like, somebody said, "You know, he can't catch anyway. Who cares?" I'm like, "Shh, have you watched him? Have you watched it all? What's been going on?" Because he's been crushing guys in the run game. Okay, that's the offensive side. We've managed to smother that. Defensively, everything's going well for the Steelers. This is by far the best quarterback pedigree they're going to play so far this season. You know, Golden Tate playing or not playing is a huge deal. And he's obviously not going to be 100%, but he's a good football player. Steeler fans have seen plenty of Marvin Jones to know what he, you know, Marvin Jones is a perfectly average capable number two. He's not a number one. You know, he's better than a number three, and you know, we'll see where things go. This Lions offense, Dave, they've been erratic, and Stafford can be erratic. The Steelers are playing really good defensively. Tell me something that you're looking for or thinking about when the Lions have the football, Steelers on defense.
Remember what we talked about? What we talk about with the Bengals and how we think that the Bengals should attack the Steelers with a guy like Giovanni Bernard. If the Lions are smart, they're watching some previous tape against the Bengals, in my opinion. They've got backs that can catch the ball out of the backfield. Riddick, was it Zinner? And then, of course, Abdullah. All those guys can catch. And if Golden Tate plays, and it looks like he's trending to that direct, you know, trending that way.
And Galladay's a question mark now, right?
I mean, right. He went backwards with it, you know, because, boy, if you don't have Tate, you're in big trouble, because I don't think Galladay's going to dress either. And he's, you know, Galladay's a 6'4", what is he, 210 kind of field stretcher as well. So, and Tate, I mean, like it or not, this AC sprain of his, he's not going to be 100%. He ain't going to want to be walloped over the middle. Marvin Jones is a guy that will work the middle of the field. Their tight ends haven't been special. I mean, I don't know what you think about Eric Ebron. I mean, he's capable.
I want to like Ebron. He can't block, but he can catch.
Right, and that the other big fella they got over there as well too. Here, look, they are. I think, and Brian Mahalik, bless his heart, looks like he's going to have to start at left tackle in this game. And yeah, I know he's gone against James Harrison and T.J. Watt during practice, and you know, he knows. Look, this is his first career start. He was not good in those 20-something snaps that he played the other day against, you know, a couple weeks ago against the Saints there. They're getting T.J. Lang back at right guard this week. Their other tackle, Ricky Wagner's been banged up. In other words, this is going to have to be some old school Alex Smith small ball, I think, in this game. The quick slants, the quick dump off running back screens, a lot of RPOs and stuff. And then when, you know, they're obviously going to have to try to run the football quite a bit. So you're going to see them try to run the outside zone with Abdullah and see if they can gash the Steelers that way. So, is there many quarterbacks in the NFL right now that throw a better deep ball than Matthew Stafford, you know, with accuracy? So I expect a lot of small ball, David, and I think that's the way the Lions are going to come out, trying to run the football to protect the tackles, and then some high percentage shorter stuff with the occasional shot deep.
Yeah, I think that's good analysis. So from the Steelers side of the ball, Tyson Alulu is going to get, you know, a fair bit of work. LT Walton will be in there. We'll see how much Daniel McCullers plays. Javon Hargrave has been excellent. Probably we haven't talked enough about the job he's done, and you could see him involved more in sub-package football with Stephon Tuitt not available. James Harrison, after the, you know, good performance against Kansas City, we didn't see a lot of him. You know, again, the Bengals didn't have the football much, particularly in that second half, so we didn't see a ton of him. And then Steelers will just do what they've been doing. They don't have to worry about a receiver where, again, if you didn't have anybody track AJ Green, you're not going to have anybody track anybody all season long. So the Steelers are going to play Hayden left and Artie Burns on the right. You know, defensively Mike Hilton has been the revelation from training camp on. What he's been able to do on a slot corner blitz has been very effective. I think we'll see more of that. It'd be interesting to see where they're bringing guys from, Dave. But I think for the Steeler defense, I think you laid it out for the Lions offense, what they need to do to be effective against the Steelers team. For the Steeler defense, it's just roll it out and do what you're doing, right? I mean, there's nothing special that you're going to dial up for this game. There's not a player that you need to, you know, think about, you know, more than every NFL team has good players at skilled positions. But there's, you know, AJ Green was a unique guy for Cincinnati that you pay more attention to. This Lions team that has a bunch of, you know, as Dave Burkett told us on Wednesday, you know, they're no stars, a bunch of average guys. They're capable guys with a really good quarterback. So you just roll it out and play defense.
This is Matthew Stafford and a bunch of guys.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
I mean, that's what it is. And I guess we shouldn't laugh about it because the Steelers have
got – because it ain't over yet.
Because the Steelers got beat by Mike Glennon and a bunch of guys. They got beat by Blake Bortles.
I think on those cases it was a bunch of guys and Mike Glennon and a bunch of guys and Blake Bortles, not Blake Bortles and a bunch of guys.
That's a good point. That's a very good Howard and a bunch of guys. Fournette and a bunch of guys. That's about what it felt like there. Look, what has been the bugaboo for this defense through the first seven games?
Look, they've been erratically effective against the run, obviously, and that, you know, we've seen them have trouble with the stretch plays, the outside zone running game, going back to Jay Ajayi in the Dolphins game last year. I mean, that was the exposure game for the defense for the first time. I mean, when they got smoked by the Eagles, they didn't get smoked because of the run game. They get just smoked in every aspect of that game in week three last year. But the Dolphins game kind of was an eye opener. And since that time, you know, that's happened. You know, the fact that it's happened at all is concerning. Now the fact that it's already happened twice this year is disconcerting. So, yeah, that's the thing. And I would imagine, you know, they will be fully focused on that aspect of things this week.
When you look at the Lions, both on tape and on the stat sheet, it's not an impressive running game at all. In fact, when it comes to successful run rates, they've got to have one of the – when it comes to running back positions specifically, they're probably one of the worst teams on run success rates at the running back position entering this game. They just have not been good at all. You cannot let them get their feet. David, I don't know if you saw the post I put up yesterday. Yards per rush allowed through seven games for the Steelers. 4.68 yards allowed per carry. However, they've only allowed a successful run play successful run play rate allowed of 35.3%. So that shows you where the gap is. That shows you they've been gashed on plays. And you know, those seven explosive plays, that runs that they've given up this year have been huge. And as a matter of fact, I researched this out a little bit more. The Steelers have allowed 12 total touchdowns. Their defense has allowed 12 total touchdowns this year. Six of those touchdowns came on drives that the opposition had explosive runs on. So if you don't give up an explosive run, you're probably not going to give up many touchdowns. I mean,
I don't know if this is a sortable statistic, but it would be interesting to see from a defensive standpoint for each team how many yards the 10 longest runs against produced. So you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
So the Steelers give up.
Absolutely.
Is it through the play index, or is that at all a sortable stat?
I don't know if you can do it by total amount of plays, but I mean you could filter it down real quick, you know, with Excel. I mean, you already know what one of the 10 longest run plays against the Steelers has been this year. Right? I mean, obviously.
Yeah, well, I mean, we could probably name them all. Fournette went for 90. I mean, that's the longest in the league, or one of the longest in the league, so.
And then you had that, who was it? Collins had that 50 and 28-yarder. You had Howard.
Dalvin Cook went for one, and Howard went for a couple.
Let's see. Fournette, 90. Collins, 50. Tariq Cohen had one of 36 and 26. Cook had one for 25. Joe Mixon this past week, one for 25 yards. Collins had one for 23 yards. Howard had one for 19. And Ivory had one for 19. And I think that's your top 10 right there, David.
And I'll bet you that. So that's probably average. So that's probably 300. Here, I'm pulling the calculator out. I'm going to guess it's 300 yards. Let's go. 90. Go ahead.
All right. 90, 50, 36, 26, 25, 23, 19. How many numbers is that?
8.
19 again, and 18.
Okay, so it's 331 yards. So 33 yards. The top 10 running plays against the Steelers this year are averaging 33.1 yards. So I would imagine that's probably – I'm going to take a wild guess that that's tops in the league. I don't know if we can come up with that number, but that's pretty good. 331 yards on the top 10 running plays against. I can pull this up. Do you have Steelers total yardage against on the ground?
I think it's 783.
783. So, you know, about 40% of it is, you know, 35% of it maybe. Yeah, what, 3/8, maybe a little bit. Yeah, 30 to 35% is on the ground on 10 plays. That's pretty amazing through seven games.
But you know, okay, what, you know what, people are going to fire back. You can't cherry pick it.
No, of course, and that's why I'd like to see what the other. If I, I'd like to see all 32 teams, what their top 10 plays against. You know, the ratio. If anybody else is that extreme, like the Steelers are, that we'll see if we can. If anybody has that data, who's listening and can sort that out for us, fire away. Hit Dave or I up on Twitter. Love to see that.
Oh, I can get that. Okay. I'll get that by the end of the day. But real quick, back to this Steelers 2017 defense. This unit's good.
Yeah, it is good. And it got written about after week two. A lot of the national writers kind of wrote stuff. And then, you know, the Steelers, you know, get torched by the Bears and, you know, all the naysayers, with some degree of legitimacy, because the Steelers most recently got taken apart by the Patriots in the playoffs. So there's legitimacy to be a little bit of, you know, show me. And there's also a legitimate response of they haven't played any good quarterbacks. And that's fair, too. So we'll see. But it looks like things are getting better. And this will be a nice test here Sunday night.
I know it sounds homerish. I'm trying to defend him, but name the great quarterbacks in the league. I mean, how many teams across the league can we say have played, murderer's row in their first seven games as far as quarterbacks?
Well, the Steelers haven't faced one of the top 10 or 12 quarterbacks in the league.
Alex Smith.
Is that fair? Okay. Yeah, you're right. I will give you Alex Smith. Yes, he's played as one of the top 10 or 12 quarterbacks in the league. Yes.
Where is Andy Dalton? Top 14, 15?
Yeah, Andy's just outside there. He's bubblish on that.
Where's Flacco?
Not close this year. He was better last night, but I mean, not close.
Now, obviously,
I mean, he's like 30. He's 31st in the league in QBR.
Now, obviously, Kaiser, Keenum, Glennon, Blake Bortles.
Keenan's played pretty well. We just didn't know at the time. But he's been the best of the group, the rest of them.
David, I've been so impressed with this defense, and a few people have said, how do you think this is this the best defense that Mike Tomlin has ever had since the 2008 defense? So I went back and I pulled up a lot of my key stats to measure in defenses of both the 2008 defense and the 2017 defense through seven games played. It's amazing how close they are. The 2008 defense had 25 sacks. This year's defense has 24. Turnovers, 10 each. Third down conversion rate.
Big key right there. Turnovers and sacks. I mean, if you're doing those two things, you're going to win.
Right.
I mean, it's just pretty simple.
Third down conversion rate. Would you believe the 2017 defense currently has a better or lower third down conversion rate than the 2008 defense by a little bit? Now, the 2018 defense averaged half a point, 0.6 less points scored against per game, but that's negligible if you ask me. Yards per pass attempt allowed. This might blow your mind. The 2008 defense allowed 5.7 yards per pass attempt allowed through seven games. This year's defense, 5.6, a little better there. Just my favorite stat of them all. You knew I was going to find a way to fit this one in. Adjusted net yards per pass attempt. The 2008 defense through seven games, 3.8. This year, 3.5. And here is probably the most amazing fact of all, when you think back to all the Dick LeBeau defenses and you think about those, how they didn't play, hardly any man played those corners off and gave up the easy pass plays. The 2008 defense, when it comes to successful pass play rates, boy, say that real fast, 40.1%. This year's 2017 defense, successful pass play rate, 38.8, lower this year than that. So outside of being gashed, David, by some of these long runs, that's really to be quite honest with you, that's the only difference between the 2017 defense and the 2008 defense. It's obviously an explosive plays. The 2008 defense gave up 11 through 7 games, all of them passes. This year's defense, 20 explosive plays through 7 games, and I think 7 of those are runs.
That's a great stat, and let's keep that in mind, because you know it's the all-time cherry picking if you ignore that, because explosive plays are what wins games. So, interesting stuff there. I will look at that, and that's really good. Okay, so
let me ask you this: do you think now, obviously, it's going to be measured by the hardware, because what did that 2008 defense win? But
yeah, of course.
Do you think by the end of this,
they failed at the biggest moment they had, by the way. they got given a lead, and Larry Fitzgerald went up the seam for, you know, up the middle with no safeties in the middle of the field for 75 yards.
Yep, I still remember them looking, you know, Larry looking up at the looking up the Jumbotron, seeing himself.
He was running right at me, sitting in the end zone.
Yeah. Well, entering the game against the Patriots, that's what, week 15, is it?
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember what week that is already.
The Steelers will have played 13 games.
Okay. Will we be talking about this? Will we still be talking about this defense potentially being the best of Mike Tomlin's, you know, career in Pittsburgh?
No, I don't think it'll. I don't think it'll supersede kind of 2000. Look, you know, there were some 2005, 2008, 2010. I mean, 2005 was Cowher. So, yeah. Look, I mean, here's the deal. We'll see. I mean, Tom Rinelli put up a stat showing the Steelers' yards against per game. And put the top 5 seasons the Steelers had had. And he had full season numbers, and they were all from the 70s, a completely different era, averaging between 100 and 150 yards a game. And I think, you know, the Steelers this year at 146 yards a game. I will be shocked. I put up a stat the other day that total yards against last year, the best defense in the NFL was Houston at 300.1 yards. They led the league in total yards against. 9 teams right now are under 300 yards. I don't know if that's telling us something is different in the game this year, that they're just teams are not getting enough yards, because certainly weather has yet to be a factor in the NFL. It's likely to be a factor as time goes on in some places. So that's going to cut yardage, you would assume. So I don't know what it tells us that currently 9 teams are under 300, which was the gold standard last year. But, you know, again, on pace for at 7 games in a 16-game season, I generally say, you know, I will be surprised, as good as the Steelers' defense has been and as good as they've been through 8 games, if they're able to keep this number, kind of the passing number against, anywhere close to 150. If they keep it under 200, that would be, you know, pretty spectacular, because in today's NFL, obviously those things go crazy. And I'll just kind of give you, as I pull it up here, give you the numbers of where they are in total defense, pass defense this year. The Steelers, let's see, passing yards per game. The Steelers are first in the league at 147. The Jags, who have been so great, are second at 162. And there are 9 teams under 200. Last year, just to give you a point of reference in terms of yardage against in the pass game, the leaders were Denver, as good as they were, 186, and they were the only team under 200. So the Steelers, through 7 games this year, are at 146. That means if they're able to keep it around, let's say, 150 through the Detroit game, they'd have to give up 250 the second half in the second 8 games to be at 200. I think that's a lot more likely. I think they'll end up a lot closer to 200 than to 150 where they are now.
I've never been a fan of that kind of yardage stat anyway.
Sure.
Because late in games and whatnot.
But over 16 games, it generally works itself out.
Okay, all right.
You know who the good pass defenses are.
All right.
But yes, I like the stats you were using. But the point being is Dom was putting this number up, like, you know, comparing it to the Steeler pass defenses of the 70s. I'll be shocked if they're in the conversation just because the rules were different, the game was different back then. But, you know, the points you made, very interesting comparisons overall. Okay, let's talk quickly, Dave, about last night. You got it right. I got it way wrong. My boy Matt Moore was not good. But I want to talk about the Flacco hit and whether you thought it was a dirty hit, whether you thought there was any intent, and whether you thought Flacco bears any responsibility to get – and the league bears any responsibility to have these quarterbacks commit earlier to sliding.
Well, he sure did slide late. He was going for the chains. He was trying to he's trying to take that thing. He's trying to redline that thing, wasn't he? Like I tried to do.
Yes, it was absolutely. The 10-yard line was the mark, and he was right there.
He's trying to do what I try to do to an old 1989 Datsun B210. He's trying to wind that thing up. Look, I mean, you start the slide that late. The poor defensive players don't have a chance when a quarterback slides that late. Now, could he have tried to avoid the head and neck? What got him the flag is the head and neck area, point blank.
Yeah, the helmet coming off killed him, and the fact that he's in there with his arm and stuff. I mean, look, it should have been a flag. There's no question. I personally think there should be.
Go ahead. You know what I'm thinking if I'm a defensive player, David? Anytime a quarterback's coming like that, I'm gonna take my damn shot at him and pay the tab.
I think that's right, because here's the thing, and you know, I'm sure not everybody sees as many games as we see. Last week, three or four times, starting with Brett Hundley and a couple other guys, quarterbacks, you saw Carson Wentz on the read option. They're going down the field, the defender. You know, all of a sudden, you think they're going to slide, and they put a juke on a defender, and they're past the defender or the sideline. You think they're going out of bounds, and they go five more yards up the sideline and hold the ball out because you can't unload on them, or you know you're getting 15, and you might get ejected, and you're definitely getting fined. On this Flacco thing, I mean, look, first of all, they show the play a million times in slow motion, so they shouldn't do that in terms of – I mean, they should do it so we see what happens, but they shouldn't do it in terms of if you're trying to understand – what happened. And I took the side that you took, that he slid late. You got to understand, the Alonzo's running full speed. So let's call him a 4.6 linebacker. Flacco's running as fast as he can run. And they're 2 yards apart, literally 2 yards apart when Flacco starts his slide. Now you tell me, the brain's got to, you know, identify it, process it. Now, could he have done something different with his arm? I think possibly. But the idea that he can commit to the tackle and then pull out of the tackle and not make contact with him, it's just not freaking possible.
You know what? They maybe they do something. I know this is sissifying it, but I don't know.
Move him 5 yards back. Somebody said that on Twitter. If that's where you were going.
No, I was thinking that a quarterback gets 2 extra yards from the moment he kneels or something like that. You know, something that would really benefit him from not trying to get
protected.
Try to protect him. And look, I know what I just said sounds barbaric. But if I literally, because it's a no-win situation for these defensive players in these situations, I'm taking my best shot at him at the quarterback. I'm thinking, all right, I might as well get my money's worth here. And
I was not on the moral outrage side last night of Twitter. Twitter was, you know, every NFL beat writer, whatever, was, you know, talking about how disgusting and, you know, suspended for 4 games or whatever. I actually be surprised if he gets suspended.
I was surprised he was not ejected. But the more that you watch it, you know, in real time and all like that, you can see where, I mean, could he have pulled off some? Could he have maybe not avoided the head and neck area? Man, you're right in the heat of the battle there, and that guy's trying to get the, you know.
One way you can do a lot of these things is wrap up rather than go for the kill shot. If you open your arms up, you're going to take all that stuff out of play. I mean, assuming you're not leading with your helmet.
Well, like I said, so that's, he, that, In the meantime, if I'm a defensive player, I'm trying to rip his damn head off. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry it comes out that way.
I don't disagree. I'm not necessarily defending Kiko Alonso, but I'm defending Kiko Alonso here in terms of timing and Flacco sliding late. These quarterbacks should not be given the benefit of the doubt when they slide a step away from the defender. It's just too late.
David, when I was a kid, I used to my mom was always worried about me biting, chewing on electrical cords as a baby. And
never stopped you, apparently, huh?
Well, my dad said, look, you know, he'll figure it out.
So how are the cords at home?
I'm still giving them a little. No, evidently I figured it out a long time ago, David. Probably not long after the old man said let him figure it out. and in other words, I got a tooth.
Yeah, right.
And something happened there. So, look.
You know when it's going to rain.
Now you know what's wrong with me, right? Look, and I use that analogy with these quarterbacks. You get it. You see enough of them get popped like that, they're going to stop chewing on the electrical cords.
yeah, you're right. Look, it's a good – I like it. I like the analogy. So you want to know another thing funny about that play, and go watch it because you can see it. All you got to do is turn on your TV. You'll see it 20 times this morning. Is absolutely one of the Ravens offensive linemen goes right after Kiko Alonso. There's a ref standing right there. He throws a flag. Another ref throws a flag. I mean, the reality is obviously the hit on Flacco was much uglier than anything else that happened. But you're not allowed to then go attack the player who hit him. The flags were thrown by the referees, and they didn't call the penalty.
Yeah, you're right. I figured they.
I mean, you watch it. There's a guy standing right there as Alonso gets jumped on. He is looking right at it, pulls his flag out, and throws it on that for that reason, and they didn't call that penalty.
Yeah, they probably felt so damn sorry for Joe.
that's what it was. That's what it was. They said we can't have this happen and have them get no benefit from it.
Have you ever seen a reaction to a player's reaction to a hit? Like,
you don't get to see them without their helmet very often. So it's you know, there were some, you know, depending on whether you think it's funny or not, there were some funny memes on Twitter.
Yeah, too soon, but
check please.
So we're gonna get emails for this episode.
Okay, all right.
Politically incorrect today, right?
Shots.
I never like to see, you know, I
don't like to see anybody get hurt.
Even, you know, a Ravens player. Boy, right. We turned this into, where did the hour and 9 minutes go? And we haven't even got to our picks yet. So I suppose
we haven't gotten to Martavis Bryant yet. So quick on Martavis Bryant. I'm a little bit surprised. I don't know if Mike wanted to publicly show something. Because, you know, what are you going to do otherwise? I mean, I don't know if he wanted to show something to his players. And maybe this is some way to kind of back up his players and say, you know, we're not going to tolerate this stuff, even if it's detrimental to the team. We both said on Wednesday we didn't really expect that to happen. Level of surprise?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm surprised it happened, but I agree with it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I am too. Let me put it this way. I don't have a problem with it. I thought Mike would have let him play and taken care of this some other way. But I don't have a problem with it. And, you know, I don't know that Martavis has handled himself with glory in the locker room this week in his interviews, but he hasn't screwed it up.
A different take with this Tom Santello, his agent and all like that. In fact, how many players do you remember hearing Tom Santello or whatever represent?
He's his only guy, isn't he? He's his only guy.
I mean, is that, in other words, you're saying you think that's the only player he represents?
Correct.
Okay, I don't know for sure, but you know, the theory is, you know, Martavis lost all that income last year, and let's face it, people think that he had even third and fourth round picks are rolling in it. That's not the case. Yeah. By the time the agent gets their thing, you know, they have to pay for their own offseason training, and I'm sure Martavis Bryant's had his legal stuff and
but his salary is only $600,000, right? I mean, it's great if you're you and me walking around, but if you're an NFL player, it's the bottom of the bet. You know, so isn't he $600,000 or so?
Yeah,
$670,000 or something.
But what I'm getting at here is he probably doesn't have a lot of money after missing last season. There's some speculation that his agents had to front him some money. Okay. And if that's the case, maybe it is his agent out there. But I didn't like that interview. Folks, we're sorry this is running long, but I got to get this off my chest. Did you listen to Martavis talk to the media the other day?
I listened to Ask My Agent, Ask My Agent. I stopped listening.
And then, you know, he was asked point blank, or do you regret what you did? And he said no.
Yeah, I don't know where you go with stuff like that. I mean, you can't undo it, and it's basically, you know, do you want to apologize or not? And his apology was, you know, Juju's a great player. I got nothing with Juju, so I'm sure he felt like he, you know, did his part.
You know, and he was asked later on in the interview, and all, you know, regret his actions and what he did, and pretty much no. And why can't you answer a question about do you want traded? You know, the things he was asked, why do we need to talk to your agent about that? That just shows what bad guidance this guy is getting. And I meant this in that show the other day, David, and I think a few listeners caught on to it as well and tweeted me. He really needs to fire his agent and get with Drew Rosenhaus or somebody that can get him in the right direction. I don't know if he's just with this Tom Santella because he owes him a bunch of money, or this guy's got a lot of dirt on him, or what. But look, he's got, like I wrote the other day on Twitter, Martavis has 8 games now to become the Steelers' biggest altar boy of 2017. Because that will not only help him, it'll help the team as well. And I'm not convinced he can do it. So we'll see. You're not concerned about him being inactive after the bye week, though, right?
No, he'll be active.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
Okay, you sound like you walked into the hallway a little bit. We lost a little bit of anything different going on there?
No, I'm sitting here. Same place.
Okay, let's roll through the picks. Dave hit it last night. I missed it by 37. If I'd gotten 37 more, I would have pushed. Buys this week: Arizona, Green Bay. Two teams missing their quarterbacks. By the way, as of this week, 11 teams will have started more than one quarterback at some point in the season. 11 out of 32. Jacksonville, the Rams, the New York Giants, and the Tennessee Titans. Those teams are on the bye. The early game is in London. The score so far in the 3 games in London is something like 97-7. They've had 2 shutouts and a 7-point game. So we have not exported anything remotely close to a close game. And possibly again this week, Dave, as the Vikings take on the Browns, the Vikings -9.5, it'll be DeShone Kizer back running the ship, and it looks like Myles Garrett didn't even get on the plane to London. He has been very good in his limited time so far, I think with 4 sacks, but he's in concussion protocol and didn't go. The Vikings by 9.5.
Lay it.
I'll take it, man. I'm just rooting for the Browns, so I'll take it. Just what the heck. The Bears getting 9 in New Orleans. And boy, I don't know that there's been a bigger true narrative turnaround than what the Saints defense has done ever since that game in Carolina when they held them to under 10 points in Carolina. They've all of a sudden been good. The running game has been great with the Saints. They seem like the real deal. Dave, are you willing to lay 9?
I'm laying it.
I'm laying it too. Falcons at the Jets, Falcons -5. I'm laying this also.
What are you showing, 5 there?
Okay. Yep.
Lay it. I'm laying the lumber this week.
Okay, Tampa hosting Carolina. Cam Newton not winning any popularity awards again, walking out of a media conference this week. Tampa -2. This is a team I like. They haven't played very well. I'm going to assume they maybe get it together at home here. I'll take the Bucks. I'm laying this.
I'm laying this as well, too. You said you're laying the Falcons as well against the Jets, right?
Yes. The only points I've taken are the Browns, so that's the only difference.
Okay.
Eagles 12.5 at home against the Niners. What are you doing?
I'm laying it. I'm laying it all this week, David.
Okay, I'll go with you with the Eagles. The Bills minus 2.5 hosting the Raiders. I like the Bills. I like the Bills a lot. I think they're a good team. Their defense has been very good. They can run the football. Tyrod Taylor is one of those guys. Can he be a top, 10, 12 quarterback, on the bubble of that as opposed to being a 20 to 22 type guy? I think he can. I don't think he's ever going to be a great passer, but he does enough with his legs that makes a difference. I like the Bills here.
I'm going to take the points in this one. I think the Raiders can win this straight up. Look, they haven't been great at times. I know they're coming off of a big win over the Chiefs and all like that. I think Derek Carr or David Carr or Derek Carr is going to be – I always get those two cars mixed up – is going to be enough here. Give me the Raiders plus the 2.5 on the road.
Okay, Bengals minus 10.5 hosting the Colts. I'm laying that.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm laying that as well, too.
I think a fantastically interesting game is the Chargers at the Patriots getting 7.5. The Chargers, their losses were close games. They've turned things around now, playing them much better. The Patriots have averaged only giving up 12 points a game their last three, and they manhandled the Falcons. I'll take the Chargers plus the 7.5 here, Dave, but, they might lose 37-7.
Yeah, I don't know what to do with this one. We don't know what Chargers team's going to show up. Boy, the Patriots just dismantled the Falcons, didn't they? This one's at Foxborough. What do you think about the Patriots losing Hightower and all too? Woo, can you?
Imagine? Oh right, we didn't. I meant to get to that. 4-year, $43 million deal, $19 million guaranteed. His salary next year of 5.75 is fully guaranteed, so he'll be back with them. But as you talked about, Dave, when we were looking to sign him, the guy, he hasn't missed every game, but he has missed 16 games over 5 years. So that's more than 3 games a year. He missed 2 early this season. He's obviously going to miss these, 9 now. He's a good player, like everybody on New England. They seem to be replaceable. He's played more outside than inside this year for the Patriots, kind of more situational football. He's missed 2 games. He's played 50% of the snaps. But it's a significant loss to that defense. Let's put it that way.
I'm still not buying those reports of what that offer, what they claim the Steelers offer was to him, David. I'm just not. I'm sorry. I don't believe them. Plain and simple, I do not believe them. Boy, did you see the Albert Breer tweet late afternoon saying that there was already concern way back in March about, whatever it is?
Yeah, I saw that, but I don't buy it because it does sound like the Steelers made an offer, and obviously the Patriots made an offer. So the Patriots signed him. So I'm not buying that concern was such a big deal. I think that's – it just doesn't intellectually make sense to me. It sounds like the Patriots were the team that he was playing for. So it's not like they didn't have all the medical records. So who was concerned about it? And the Steelers apparently made an offer. So I didn't buy his tweet.
Can you imagine had the Steelers signed Hightower and then this injury happened and then a tweet like that from Albert Breer coming out?
All right. If that tweet comes out, then it looks like the Steelers didn't do their homework.
Yeah, a year after Ladarius Green. Can you imagine?
Although I will say, if a guy plays 6 games effectively in the NFL and then gets hurt, it's hard to say, whatever. If it had been the first game, the first preseason game, then you say, what the hell? But, okay, so I got the Chargers. Who you got?
Give me the Patriots slate of points at home.
Okay, so that's a very interesting 1 o'clock game. A couple very good 4 o'clock games here. The Texans at the Seahawks. The Texans getting 5.5. This will be a big test for the Texans and Deshaun Watson. Dave, I don't like taking the Seahawks, but I'm taking the Seahawks in this one.
Yeah, I think on the road that how many men do they have? The 15th man or 12th man or whatever. I think it makes a difference in this game. I think Deshaun Watson comes back to earth a little bit. Give me the Seahawks later points.
Okay, Dallas at Washington. Dallas on the road laying 2.5. I think something that got lost in that game that Carson Wentz played so well was that Kirk Cousins played well as well. So 3 more touchdowns. He had an interception. Kirk Cousins has played really good football for the past year and a half. I think he's really underrated. I don't know what's up with the Skins defense, but if they're effective against their look, I'm going to take the points at home and focus on Ezekiel Elliott, make Dak beat you. Dak can beat you, but I make them beat me. So I'll take the Skins plus 2.5 at home.
Yeah, give me the Cowboys on the road here, handing it off to a bunch to Ezekiel Elliott here. So I don't know what to do with the Redskins right now.
Monday night, Denver at Kansas City. Boy, the Broncos get shut out for the first time in a generation or two. Kansas City. I tweeted, if you look on my Twitter feed, early crack at dawn this morning, maybe crack at dawn kind of in Newfoundland, I tweeted a stat about the Kansas City Chiefs defense and Bob Sutton. And their defense under Sutton has been surprisingly bad. I mean, you know, ranking in the – you know, except for a season here or a season there against the run or against the pass. And their numbers this year are not good. But Denver, Trevor Siemian was everybody's darling kind of 3 weeks into the season. And now they want to ship him out of town as fast as possible. The problem is the alternative is Brock Osweiler, and that isn't doing anybody any good. And Paxton Lynch looks like maybe he never going to be ready for prime time. So they got quarterback issues. So I don't know, Dave, is 7 too many or not? I'll take the Chiefs at home minus 7 and think that it maybe won't be that close.
Yeah, I'm with you. There's no way they lose 3 in a row, right? I'm talking about the Chiefs. I just don't see it. At home, a big Monday night game. I'm all over the Chiefs laying the points here.
Yeah, a lot of primetime action for the Chiefs after starting 5-0. They go primetime. They go Sunday night. They go now Monday night. They want to probably look good in this one. All right, Steelers minus 2.5. Dave, so I got kind of the feeling at game time last week, and everybody was talking about low scoring game and whatever, and I went with the Steelers and thought the over was the better way to go, although it was close because there were no points scored in the second half. But the Steelers ended up putting 29 points up. And as much as we have disparaged kind of the offensive performance, I'm going to just go off the board here and say that even though it's on the road, it is in a dome, that the Steelers, even without Martavis Bryant, they put it all together this week, and they take care in this game in a big way. And I'm going to go Steelers 34, Lions 19.
No reason whatsoever, right?
No, basically not.
How is that red zone going to be? Can the defense get a few turnovers in this game? I think the key matchup here is the Steelers defense against the Lions offense here. I just don't see how the Lions are going to score more than, say, 19 points. So the question is, how many can the Steelers score? I think they get a defensive touchdown in this one, and I think they get a few more on the offensive side of the ball. I have them just barely covering. I think you're showing a line of 3 on this, right?
Two and a half, actually.
Okay. In that case, I'll give them a 4-point win, 23 to 19 in this one. Another game that we're probably going to be talking about. You know, red zone or short yardage or something along those lines. I'm afraid. So I'm not going to pick them to score 30 points until they score 30 points.
Well, if you're giving them a defensive touchdown, then the offense only needs 23.
Yeah, no, not to me. No, I've learned my lesson. Much like chewing on an electrical cord, no 30 points for the Steelers until they actually do it.
All right. Yeah, well, there we go.
All right. Where did that hour and a half go? Okay. We'll recap this thing on Monday. We'll start looking ahead to the bye week and start getting into several of the things that David said earlier in the show there as well, too. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and you want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com and hit that donate button up right navigational bar. And, David, have a great weekend.
You too. Everybody have a great weekend. And, as always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.